Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. David Bray, Chief Information Officer within the FCC. Also joining our conversation today from IBM is Dave Hathaway. So, David, how has the role of the Chief Information Officer evolved into that of a trusted business advisor or trusted advisor? And from your perspective, what are the key characteristics of a successful CIO?
So I think CIOs have, if you look at the progression, I mean, we actually came out of the mainframe days when mainframes were actually first and foremost being used by chief financial officers. And so it used to be that CIOs reported to chief financial officers, and then maybe they start reporting to chief operating officers. And now I think it has become so critical to any organization, whether it's in the private sector or the public sector, to have a sense of not just the IT that you're doing, but how you're using it strategically to be more agile, to be more resilient, and be more efficient. That a good CIO, if they don't speak the language of business and don't speak the language of the mission, they're missing the boat, in my opinion, if they only see their job as being infrastructure. And so one of the things that I think for successful CIOs is to look at your position description as basically just the initial table stakes for what you then need to exceed expectations and do bigger on. And so at least at the FCC, we were very fortunate with the chairman and the commissioners that we have. They were willing to actually recognize that the CIO role needed to be more than just IT. It actually needed to think about transformation across the agency. I think for fellow CIOs, the interesting question is, what do you want to keep as your own secret sauce for your organization? And what things do you want to rely on, an ecosystem approach or a network approach? At the FCC, obviously, we chose to do 100% commercial cloud, and I think that makes sense for us. I think that's probably true for a lot of private sector companies too, but that's a hard change for any organization to make a shift from because they're still used to doing everything by themselves, and I think that's just not fast enough.
Mm-hmm. So to what extent can collaboration and partnerships drive innovation?
To a huge degree. In fact, I would say probably looking back, if we were to look back 10 years from now on this era, I would say this is the shift from the era in which single organization or siloed organizations could do everything self-contained to an era in which it has to be networked. And so it really is identifying what makes your node on the network unique or your node in your organization unique, and then how do you partner with other nodes in the network to get things done. The story that I think did not get enough play last year was the interesting trend in which you now have Anonymous and ISIL, both non-state entities, actually in conflict with each other. Neither is a nation-state entity. And so it raises this interesting question about, you know, where are nation states even going? And I don't want to get too far out there except to say that as things become more global, there will always be a need for local level action and things like that. But as things become more global, are nation states in some respects, if they operate in the old way they used to, are they really just middlemen? And do we need to think of them more as network bridges between the local and the global? And how do we actually evolve that as a way moving forward? And so I think collaboration partnerships are essential. The challenge is how do you make sure they're not collaboration partnerships by committee, but it really is much more the change agents approach where you're empowering the edge and you're not waiting for permission to do things, but you have a common narrative and a common and sort of almost common protocol in some respects where I give you autonomy and so you can act without waiting for the committee to give approval.
And technology is changing and evolving rapidly, and you know, that trend continues. What are the emerging technologies that hold the most promise for you at the FCC and then also kind of more broadly in the federal government?
So I'm probably going to answer that from a all sectors perspective because I don't know if there's anything particularly unique to the public sector, but I would say the most interesting trend I see is the application of machine learning to organizations. In particular, clearly, human beings, in some respects, there's even more demand for our time. We have increasingly shortened attention spans. We still have to go home and eat and sleep, and ideally we have lives. And so can we have things that used to be done by humans, can we have them be done by machines? And it may sound far-fetched, except when you look at what's being done with Surrey, IBM Watson, Cortana, there actually was a competition even just 3 years ago to see if anyone could write an algorithm that would grade papers as good as a third grade teacher would in terms of finding the same sentence mistakes, grammar mistakes. And for $60,000, actually someone won that competition. And so if you think about what we do in public service, there's a lot of things that we do that are rote in nature, partly because we have to be fair. Sort of the job classification process, the job advertising process. Could we actually give those things a machine as opposed to having humans involved? We could even make the code open source in some respects so you could be assured that the hiring process is fair. But is that a way of actually accelerating the hiring process so we can be much faster? Same thing in terms of maybe even requests for proposals or RFPs. I mean, supposedly when the U-2 spy plane was done in the 1950s, it was only 2 pages for the U-2 spy plane. I would challenge you now to see a 2-page RFP out there anywhere. And so I hold out hope, but it's going to require experiments. Again, it's if we go back to the quote that you have to get experiments to get expertise. I would love to see more and more approaches to take things that used to be done 100% by humans, and maybe they're either partially done by machines plus humans in the loop together or 100% done by machines.
Mm-hmm. So, David, what advice would you give someone who's considering a career in public service?
I think I'm going to quote a phrase that was actually shared to me, the Deputy Director of National Intelligence, Stephanie O'Sullivan, who said, it is going to be a career in which you will feel all spectrum of emotions, but it will also be the best career you're going to have. And so I actually would say for public service, especially if you're doing it right, you will never be bored. If you're bored in public service, you've not taken up the right mantle. And I'm more than happy to find and help people find opportunities if they find themselves bored. Public service is again, going back to James Madison and the Federalist Papers, it is the greatest reflection of humanity. You really see the entire spectrum of all the good, the mundane, the not so good that human beings do. But it really is a cause bigger than yourself. And it can be an interesting rallying call. And it's been never more important in some respects to take on the mantle of public service because we are in that period of exponential change. If you think about it, the printing press predated the Treaty of Westphalia by about 200 years. And so would we not be surprised that the internet, which akin to the printing press, is new ways of sharing information, new ways of organizing, if this is going to require us to come up with new ways of organizing that still have checks and balances, that still stand for freedom and what we actually embody in the United States, but we have to figure out how to do that. And the only way you can do that is really from the inside. You asked the question about who inspired me. I had a mentor by the name of Garland Richmond, who when I actually, back in my college career, after my second year, I decided to do Habitat for Humanity and be a crew lead for a while. He said, you can go and do that. Just remember, you will always make a bigger difference on the inside than you will on the outside. And so here I was traveling to other countries, and it felt good, but I did recognize I was an outsider. And I now see what he means, that if you really want to change the system, if you really want to actually make a difference, you have to take the time to understand the narratives. You have to take time to understand what's the current existing stream of consciousness of the system, and then be very strategic about what disruptions you do, what leadership activities you do. If you want to make lasting change, you have to do it as an insider. And I think that is key right now because we do need to change. And if we don't have people accepting the mantle of doing leadership in public service and doing transformation, we're going to fall behind. Mm-hmm.
Great way to end it. Thanks for coming in today. It's good to see you. I appreciate your time. But more importantly, Dave and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Oh, I'm humbled. Thank you, Michael and Dave. And it really is a team sport.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with Dr. David Bray, Chief Information Officer within the Federal Communications Commission. My co-host today from IBM has been Dave Hathaway. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan. And thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.